if you step back and think about it, people are still engaging in search activities. They're just moving mediums. You really want to make sure that you're popping up in these answer engines so that your answer comes up first and be a little bit comfortable with the fact, yeah, your organic traffic is going to start dropping. But if you're doing this properly, your leads shouldn't be dropping.
The rules of online growth marketing have changed. Today, it's not just about ranking higher, it's about being the answer. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the CEO Coaching International podcast. I'm your host, Steve Sandusky. My guest today is Kevin Roy. Kevin is the co-founder and CEO of Green Bananas SEO. He's also a pioneer in digital marketing, and his company is a three-time member of the Inc. 5000 Fastest Growing Companies list. In today's conversation, Kevin and I discuss how the rise of AI and large language models like ChatGPT, Gemini, and Claude is transforming the way businesses attract leads and build demand. We explore what it takes to create a strong marketing foundation, how answer engine optimization is changing the rules of search, and how to adapt your strategy for a world where 60% of searches are now zero click. With that, please enjoy my conversation with Kevin Roy. When companies want to increase their flow of leads, one of the things they often turn to is search engine optimization, content marketing, digital marketing. But of course, since AI came out here in the last few years with ChatGPT, Claude, Gemini, Perplexity, those large language models, that's really changed the game quite a bit. So before we get into some of the specifics about how firms can use content marketing and AEO, which stands for answer engine optimization, search engine optimization, what are some things that companies have to do from a foundational standpoint to make sure that, hey, we got to have these things in place first? Otherwise, we're just going to be wasting a whole bunch of money throwing stuff out there without a whole strategy behind it.
I would start by saying, as of June, 60% of searches are now zero-click searches. So that's 40% of the people that are actually making it through or doing a search in Google and going to a website, and 60% of the people are getting the answer in that little answer snippet. I think my favorite quote this year, and I can't remember who said it, was that the LLMs were written by linguists, not programmers. So the first thing that you should be doing as a company is make sure that your foundation is understandable. Make sure you have your who, what, when, why, where, how on your website so people are able to see a comprehensive view of the company, because the answer engines are going to be asking questions and looking for answers, and they want to be able to get a holistic understanding of the company. So making sure that your site isn't just about marketing and positioning, but really describes what you do and how you do it will be the first step that you need to be taking.
So my understanding is that Google ranks pages and not websites. So when you talk about this who, what, where, when, and why about your company, should that all be on a single page? Can that be interspersed throughout the website? Does the rise of these AI models, does that sort of change the game from how things are evaluated, from no longer just looking at a single page and now it's at a website? Or how does that work?
I wouldn't put all of your information in your company on one page, because you don't want to dilute the relevance of the topic of that page. And ChatGPT and Gemini and Claude and Perplexity, they're all still pulling from search. So you want to make sure that you have a page that is relevant to the specific keyword phrase that people are searching for, or prior to this, you wanted to rank for. But there should be other information about your company on your About Us page. Or like, imagine if you're a physical therapist, you want to have something about your physical therapist, your trainers, what you do, what kind of things you solve, if you take insurance, where you're located, what your hours are, what education your therapist had. So you want to create that full picture, but you don't have to jam it all on one page, because if you do, you'll dilute the relevance of whatever was ranking before. And ranking is still very important.
This might sound like a basic question, but oftentimes we tend to skip the basics and try and get to the juicy stuff. But when it comes to designing the website and making it effective for SEO, making it effective for AEO, how important is it to be very clear on like who your ideal client profile is, who your avatar is, being very clear on your target customer, all of those types of things, as opposed to being a little bit more generic and like, hey, we don't want to miss any potential customers, so we're going to be just a little generic in how we describe what it is that we do, has the relative importance of being very clear and focused on who your ideal target audience is. Is that more important, less important, about the same importance?
I think it's more important. I like one of the things that I tell clients is clarity before capital. Like, your brand has to be discoverable, understandable, and attributable. So you really want to have that holistic picture. But also, one thing that you touched on is not just on your website, but you want to make sure that the PRs that you're putting out, that the citations that you're getting listed in, that your social and YouTube or LinkedIn content all helps complete that story.
And that's a good point there. And we may be all over the map here as we talk about this topic, right. I love just talking about this kind of stuff. But how important is it to have a multi-channel presence out there? So some people might, hey, I just really focus on my website and I drive a lot of traffic to that, and we do digital advertising that goes to landing pages or whatever. How important is it to have a YouTube channel, to be on Instagram, to be on TikTok, to be on Facebook? Does the rise of AI, does that sort of change the calculus in terms of where you need to present yourself, or how does that work?
It unfortunately is becoming omni-channel. And the different LLMs are looking at different places. So Google takes a lot of stock in their GBP or Google Business Profile reviews because it's their property. They own it. They can access it easily. So Gemini will feed a lot from your reviews in Google. ChatGPT will look at Yelp reviews. Some engines favor YouTube. Some engines favor, they're pulling content from Twitter and LinkedIn. So you really need to have an omni-channel approach. And it's not as with some of the tools that they have now, like Hootsuite, or there's other tools that you can use. You can take it one message and then pump it across all different channels. But that is something that you need to do. Like, we don't have a YouTube channel and we're doing a YouTube channel because it really starts to help rank in that.
So you mentioned that Google tends to pull from their business profile pages since they own that. Well, they also own YouTube. Microsoft owns LinkedIn. So are those organizations, as you mentioned that they favor it, but I didn't hear you mention like LinkedIn. Microsoft has a stake in OpenAI, which is ChatGPT. So is there some favoritism to LinkedIn if you're using ChatGPT?
So I haven't seen that, but there is definitely a favoritism to high authority publications. So if you look at some of the references that ChatGPT pulls out, you're going to recognize all of those. Like, it's Clutch, it's Avvo, if you're a lawyer, it's like most of the citations and publications you recognize. So just like search engines used to, the LLMs are gravitating towards the high authority publications, partly because they don't have to vet them. I know that Google does pull a lot from reviews. And while we're on that, I have one of my favorite Google hacks is one of the things that we've noticed. If you have a keyword and a location inside a review, it will really help you rank better on the maps, but that's very hard to do. It's really hard to get a review. It's even harder to say, hey, Steve, can you just say location and this keyword in your review? So that almost never happens. But what you can do is respond to that review. And that response, as corny as it sounds, you can put a keyword and a location in that review and Google equal weights them. You can almost double up on your reviews and then like sneak in relevant data in there that will help you rank higher in maps and locations.
Well, and in terms of getting those reviews, I know there's lots of companies who work really hard with their clients and customers and ask them to go, hey, here's the link, go write a review if you would, we'd really appreciate it. So I'm assuming that is an effective strategy.
Welcome to the CEO Coaching International podcast. What we do on this show is we find the world's leading entrepreneurs and CEOs, and we spend about a half hour with them and really dig into their story. We want to understand the strategies and the tips and the tools that they use to make big happen in their business. And by the end of each episode, you'll have actionable ideas that you can implement on your path to big success. To learn more about CEO Coaching International and how we can help you dramatically grow your business, visit us at CEOCoachingInternational.com.
It is. It's so hard. So we found that the most effective way is to ask someone verbally. Sending out emails doesn't work. People say they'll get to it. It's just hard. We're all busy. It's funny that the society seems to find it really easy to write a bad review, but a good review is hard to get because people aren't all fired up. So one of the things that we found is we'll do an OR on the phone. Hey, Steve, can we get off this call 5 minutes early? And it'd be great if you could help us write a review.
So let's take a step back here for a moment and let's talk about SEO, search engine optimization. And that's something that's been effective for a long time now. So tell me a little bit about what are some of the key attributes of SEO that we need to have in place? And then talk about the shift from SEO to AEO, answer engine optimization. Mm-hmm. And for companies that have built a website that was optimized for SEO, and we now live in an AEO world, what do we need to be doing differently?
If you're optimized properly, if you're following the rules that Google has put out, and you're not doing black hat tactics where you're like buying junk links and trying to hide text in backgrounds and old school things like that, making sure that your page, like you had spoken about earlier, is relevant to the keyword phrase that you're trying to rank, that is really important. Making sure that links, high authority links that are relevant to the keyword phrase that you're trying to rank, are pointing back to that page. Making sure that your citations are all locked up. Like citations are basically like a phone book, Yellow Pages, Better Business Bureau, things like that. Making sure that they have similar content. Those are the foundational things that you need to do for SEO. It's the things that we've always done. And we found that the people that we're working with are ranking better in the language models. The two pieces that you should add to it are learn to love schema. So schema is markup language. I think a great way to describe it, if for people that don't know what markup language is, if you ever went and searched for Taylor Swift tickets and the venue, the location, and the prices inside of the search, that's markup language. That's data that the website is saying to the search engine, pull this directly. We're finding that markup language, the LLMs can access it faster because they know exactly where to look. And so they're pulling data from that. So we're putting FAQs that are relevant to the keyword phrase that we're trying to rank inside of the schema on those pages. You can put schema inside images now and take an image and use that to make it more relevant to the search that you're trying to appear for.
So when you talk about schema, let's take WordPress, for example, mm-hmm. which is many people are building websites yep. on WordPress. Are you talking about in the HTML of the WordPress site that you're yep. putting the Taylor Swift tickets and the venue and the pricing yeah. and the time?
Yes.
It's actually in the code of WordPress.
It's in the code. It's a JSON file that you put in there. WordPress does have plugins that do it. I'm not in love with, I'm not going to say all the plugins, but some of the plugins that I've used or that we've used don't allow you to upload schema directly. They're creating the schema for you. And they're asking certain basic questions like who you are, what you are you an author? And then it populates the schema for you, but you can really blow out your schema and write it yourself and then stick it in the code on a website. And if it's wrapped in a JSON file, no one will see it. The great thing about Google Search Console will tell you if you made a mistake on it. It's very easy to make a mistake on schema. You put extra space and it breaks the whole thing. But ChatGPT can help you fix that.
That's
Google
right.
Search Console could tell you it's broken. It's amazing. It's like, this is broken, fix it. And then it finds the error and then does that. And you can use ChatGPT to help you write more robust schema too.
Okay, so the schema piece, I think there's other things like maybe site speed, crawlability, mm-hmm. mobile experience, all those still relevant?
Yeah, that matters. Click-through rates, still a rank factor. People going through the site, 404 errors is still a rank factor. If the site's broken and it can't get crawled, Google will start to crawl it and then leave. Site speed is definitely, I think it's even more important now because think about the speed in which the LLMs are calculating right now. They're not waiting around for access.
Okay. So you mentioned schema. We mentioned a few other things. Are there some other things in the traditional SEO world that are still relevant today that we need to optimize for?
One thing that I would add that the LLMs do like is put a little soundbite on the top of the page. So remember that the LLMs are giving answers to questions that are short, that fit in a small soundbite area. So if you take almost like an executive summary or an executive soundbite and stick it on the top of the page, you can even blow it up like the big quote on an article in a newspaper. And that seems to get accessed a lot more, and you're basically providing the answer for the answer engines.
And in that case, do you have to preface it with like a description of, or maybe you even ask the question and then here's the answer, mm-hmm. and that's what you want the AI to pick up on? Do you have to preface it with anything, or is the AI smart enough to know that if I go to this page and I see this mm-hmm. big call out box at the top of the page with a paragraph that sounds like the answer to the kind of question that just got asked into ChatGPT, I'm just going to pull that. Is it smart enough to know that?
If the page is built properly, then yes, because it sees the metadata, it sees your H1. So your header tag is super, super important. So it'll see your H1 tag and then associate the H1 tag with what you have under it. But one thing that you brought up that I didn't mention is questions and answers. So FAQs, which used to be like the dirty word in websites 10 years ago, are now like, they're super effective. So I mentioned that we put FAQs in schema. Putting FAQs in your body copy really helps. And you can stick it in the bottom of a page in chat and Google, they're still going to see that. So a lot of people get really concerned about the user experience because a lot of text doesn't look great. But we always say that you can hide a dead body below the fold because no one ever looks there. So you can put some of that content on the bottom of the page.
Well, related to the FAQs, what I've also seen, and it seems like this is pretty effective as well, going back to the traditional SEO where you take a topic and you just have an exhaustive report on this particular topic, you've got it laid out nicely so that it's scannable. But what I've seen people do now is they start that page with a table of contents, and then each section of the table of contents is a question that they think is typically going to be mm-hmm. asked by someone on this topic that they're putting into an AI. And then if you are scanning the table of contents at the top of the page and you look at like, oh, point number three there, that's really what I'm looking for. You click on that and boom, it drops you right down to that part on the page. So is that effective?
Yeah, because what it's doing is it's making it easier and it's emphasizing clarity. So one of the funny things is that as marketing gets more complicated, the amazing thing about AI is it's becoming simpler. And the people that are really clear in the deliverability of the content on their website seem to be winning. And what you just brought up is an anecdote of how to make it easier. Like, this is a way to digest this easier. This is a way to read this easier. So you don't have to go through 2,800 words on a page to get your answer.
And what else should we be thinking about here as it relates to making the shift from SEO to AEO? Do we have to make like wholesale changes to our website so that everything now is in the form of a question and then we're answering that question? Or is it not quite that difficult?
I think if you have a strong organic foundation, you're 80 to 90% of the way there. Putting those bite-sized pieces on the tops of your pages isn't a huge lift. Learning schema is going to take you a day or 2 days, and then you can start to implement it into every page. So that's also not a huge lift, and that will really get you going. Link building, if it's high quality links, are still very important. The more you get mentioned, like podcasts, once you get your podcast published, take it and stick it in your LinkedIn. Then your LinkedIn is a highly relevant link. Go into your podcast, take your podcast, put it on your page. Another thing that I'm going down the rabbit hole, but author expertise, experience, authority, and trust is even more important now. A great way to establish yourself as an authority is to create an author page on your website and link your LinkedIn page to your author page. Because according to a lot of the LLMs, particularly Google, LinkedIn is a high authority publication and you're pointing to your author page. So it's saying, oh, LinkedIn thinks that Kevin's an important author, right? So, because it's looking at that link. So that really helps.
So back in the heyday of SEO, the objective was you wanted to show up high on a Google search page, and then you wanted people to click on your blue link there and go mm-hmm. to like your website. Today, you mentioned a vast percentage of the searches now end up in zero click. So people are not clicking on something. The AI is giving it the answer right there on the page. So is that just killing people that they're not clicking through? Or how can companies that still want to do content marketing like this, how can they be effective in this world where very few people are clicking through on the link?
If you step back and think about it, people are still engaging in search activities. They're just moving mediums. You really want to make sure that you're popping up in these answer engines so that your answer comes up first and be a little bit comfortable with the fact, yeah, your organic traffic is going to start dropping. But if you're doing this properly, your leads shouldn't be dropping. You might be getting a lot of direct traffic that are coming to the website or people that are just Googling your name and coming to the website. Another thing to think about, if you're a B2B, we have found that people are still clicking through to the website because they can't get enough information to make an informed decision in that little snippet. So a lot of our B2B clients are seeing a small drop. Some B2Cs are seeing a large drop, but it doesn't mean that people aren't finding them and contacting them.
In the early days of these large language models, it seemed like they were not showing their source for the information that they were displaying. Now it seems like I'm seeing more and more links where they are giving you the opportunity to click and see what the source of the point that they just said. Are you seeing that as well?
Yes.
Is that sort of the AI companies responding to the content manufacturers and saying, hey, you got to give us credit for the stuff that you're just skimming off of our website?
I didn't even think about that. My first thought was that AI keeps getting penalized for hallucinating and they have to back up their data. But you're right.
Yeah.
There have been a lot of lawsuits already about we didn't tell you could have this information. So they are giving links and credibility. One thing that just made me think of is that inside of Google Analytics, there's not a specific tile for it, but now you can see if people click a ChatGPT link and come through it as a referrer source. So you are able to see how you're coming in through some of the LLMs.
Yeah, and I've noticed that as well. Like just the other day, I had asked ChatGPT something, and then it had a link in it. And then I clicked on the link to go to the website that it was referencing from that source data. And looking at the URL of what I clicked on, it clearly showed source equal ChatGPT something like that. So to the owner of that website, to your point, they can now tell, oh yeah, that was a click that came directly from ChatGPT.
Yeah, it's nice. It puts a little UTM and then it makes people a little bit less panicky.
Yeah. Talk to me about the metrics that we should be looking at today in terms of determining how effective our online marketing strategies are, and have those metrics that we look at changed in a world of AEO compared to what we looked at back in SEO?
I think the big litmus is, are you seeing a decline in leads coming into your business? So not just saying, have we lost traffic through organic traffic? What are we going to do about it? Are you seeing a dip in your business? If you're seeing that, then you need to start looking at AI models to see if you're popping up in AI. There's quite a few of them out there, like Ahrefs has one, SEMrush has one. My favorite right now is Wake. It's what AI knows about you.ai. I do not like the name of the company. It's very hard to say. It's like wakea.ai. But one of the things that tool does a great job at showing how you're stacking up against your competitors and where the gaps are in knowledge that it's looking for. Like it's looking for more information on your certification. It's looking for more information on your physicians. So it's a great tool to say, hey, here are some of the gaps that I need to address. And it gives you a great blueprint.
Yeah, there's an old joke in advertising that we know 50% of advertising works. Unfortunately, we don't know which 50%, right? Because we didn't have the data back in those days. But today, it's a completely different story. We've got all the data. So talk to me a little bit about how companies should be capturing the data, analyzing the data, tracking the data, and how important is using the data in making decisions and making adjustments to your campaigns going forward versus the traditional, I've got experience, I can recognize patterns, I got a gut feel, I know my audience. And yeah, the data may say this, but I'm going to slightly go this other direction. Yeah. Is that even relevant in this world of where we're washing data?
Oh, I think it's even more relevant in what we're doing now. There is so much data. And even if you're talking about advertising, which ad is working, which ad is not working, there are in-app tools and out-of-app tools that will help you optimize your content and your creative. And there are heat mapping tools that will tell you what people like and what people don't like on your website. Google Analytics is free and it will tell you what pages people are dropping off of if they're completing your purchases. So unless you want to spend a lot of money for nothing, then you can ignore and just brute force it. But But there is so much data that if you just take the time and look at it, you can refine almost every step in the entire process and make it beneficial.
And I'm imagining that that's a lot of the heavy lifting that your company does. So when firms hire you, that's part of the package, is that you're looking at all this data. You've got the experts who can analyze this and make the tweaks and get response rates higher, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I always like to say we're data geeks. So people don't hire us for the prettiest picture or a brand story. Our brand agencies will hire us to get their clients to return ROAS. And our job is just to read the data, be impartial to the data, obviously report it if a client is like, we love this image, where we're like, well, the internet doesn't love this image. Maybe we should switch. And that's our job, is to refine and to increase ROAS.
Yeah. So walk me through, if I'm a prospective client of your firm and I want to get more effective at my whole online marketing strategy, digital marketing, I want to generate more qualified leads through my online presence, omnichannel. I want to look at different outlets out there to do that. What questions are you going to be asking me? What's the process if I want to work with you to achieve a greater ROI on my marketing advertising spend?
We don't charge for this because we really want to make sure if the client's going to be a good fit. So we will do a full competitive audit. So if a client comes in and says, here are some of my objectives, here are the metrics that I want to hit, but here are a few of our competitors, we'll go in and do a deep dive and see what they're doing in paid, see what they're doing organically, see if they're ranking in LLMs and how they're doing next to each other. And then we'll put together some recommendations. I think one of my favorite parts about our company, other than the fact that we work in almost every industry, so we're really spread across, you know, education and tech, biotech, defense, doctors, lawyers, plumbers, consumer products. The thing that I like the most is that we're medium agnostic. So when you're working with a company that just manages Meta, they're going to try to keep you on platform. We'll work with the client and say, hey, we think Meta and Google Ads, we're not sure which one's going to work. Let's try them both. And we'll see Google Ads start to crush Meta. We're just going to say, if I were you, I'd move your budget. And they always say yes. So we really look holistically how the company performs across all the different platforms and channels that we work with.
And this might be a in the weeds question, but how do you know how much dollars or how much data you have to get before you can determine whether this particular campaign is working or not working, or we need to make a tweak to it?
It typically takes 90 days unless the spend is super small, but we really don't do much of that anymore. I think you have to think about the math. So if we have one product that we're selling and it's a dollar a click and you're spending $100 a day, you're going to get your data pretty quickly. If you're doing 100 products at $100 a day at a dollar a click, it's going to take 10 times longer. So it really is like, how many times can the same pieces of data fire to start to make an assumption on an average assumption on what's working and what's not working, and then spit us back that data that more often than not, this happens over a large amount of time. So if we run $2 a day and a dollar an ad, and then we get a 50% return, it doesn't really mean we have a 50% return. It's just lucky. So you want to make sure you have enough data, but it typically takes 90 days to start to see that and to start to optimize the campaign.
So YouTube obviously is hugely popular and has become even more so here in the past 2, 3, 4 years. There's a lot of people on YouTube that have specific channels, whether it's lawyers, whether it's doctors, whether it's financial advisors. A lot of professional service providers have YouTube channels. There also seems to be a big disparity between one person who gets, let's say, 100,000 views on a video and another person who gets 100,000 views on a video, and say they're in the same industry, yet the first one gets a lot more leads from that 100,000 viewers than the second one does. Any sort of general thoughts on YouTube specifically, if someone is like a professional services provider, what are things that they can do in their videos that maybe are more purchase intent design, or what do they need to be doing in those videos that's actually going to generate more leads from the videos as opposed to just more views?
So first, we don't do organic. This isn't something that's our core competency. However, I think I mentioned earlier that this is something that we're like, we don't have a YouTube channel. We're building a YouTube channel. What makes one person really successful and the other person not so successful are the hooks. So there's a science behind the visuals, the hooks, the text, the grabbing headline. And honestly, you put it into ChatGPT and they're going to come out and say, try this hook, try this. And you just experiment with it. But that's really the big difference between viral videos or people who have crazy TikTok channels. It's the hook.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about the content piece and the hook. So let's look at you. Let's look at Green Bananas. So you mentioned you're going to have a YouTube presence here before too long. How do either you personally think about this, or how do you counsel clients, or what have you seen in your experience as far as if you have a company, should the company be sort of the face, meaning like you're not highlighting a specific person within the company to be the face of the firm? It's more like we want our viewers to be attached to the brand as opposed to a specific person within the brand. Now, obviously, both can work, but what do you see out there, like in Green Bananas' case? Is Kevin going to become the face of the company, or are you going to have multiple people, or how are you going to position the company publicly like that?
So I've always been a believer in this, is that people buy from people. So like it or not, I'm going to have to be the YouTube person, right?
And then you've got a face for YouTube.
Yeah, right. But someone else for the company can do that too. But I think it's really important, especially with one of the things I'm going back and forth on, and I've made a decision to not do this, is I'm part of an SEO mastermind group, and there are some people that are using AI to generate videos of them, and they're putting it on YouTube and it's working. But I still go back to people buy from people, and they want to see a real person that is really talking to them and really relating to them. And it's okay that they do a few ums and ahs and make mistakes and scratch their eye at the wrong time, because that's human. That's the way people speak. And I think that is something that you should be putting forth in the videos, is humanize yourself, especially if you're in a technology business where there's a large knowledge gap. People are not going to understand what you do and how you do it, but they're going to understand that they can relate to you. And I think that should be the crux of the channel.
Well, to your point about people using AI to create videos of themselves, what I've also seen happen is, let's say someone is a content provider or they're a subject matter expert. They'll create a custom GPT in ChatGPT. Mm-hmm. They'll basically upload all of their intellectual property into the custom GPT. They'll have it structured appropriately, and they'll design it so that ChatGPT can maybe pull from Dropbox or different places where maybe this content resides. And then they connect it to an AI that can make a video of that specific person. And then you can ask the AI to create a 3-minute video based on my intellectual property answering this specific mm-hmm. question mm-hmm. of a video of me doing it. And so yeah. I personally don't have to record the video. It looks like me. It's what I would answer because it's based on my content. And boom, I can pop out a video just like that. Do you see that happening much?
Is that a big problem? I do. I know. I struggle with it. I do see that. But part of me thinks that we're both technophiles. I think so many people are jumping into generative video right now because it's insanely cool. Like the stuff that it does is absolutely amazing. But is it going to sway people, or are people going to say, is that really an AI video or is that a real human? It's almost like, I don't know if you remember the Segway. The Segway was like the absolute coolest technology in the world when it came out. And then people realized, I'd rather walk than ride that thing. Part of me thinks that that's what's going to happen with AI, unless it gets so precise that you can actually do something like that.
Well, and that reminds me of a question that I've asked a number of people here recently. Will people pay more for the real human versus the AI generated version? So I'm going to ask you the same question, which is, let's say you've got a favorite author, and this author typically spends 2 or 3 years slaving over writing a book, mm-hmm. and then they publish the book. Well, today, that same author, again, they could upload all their previous books into a custom GPT. They could ask the AI through a series of prompts to basically write a new book in my style, in my voice, in my tone, and here it is. And then the book comes out, and maybe it takes a few hours for the author to have an AI actually write a new book, are you going to pay the same price for that AI generated book by your favorite author where they spent maybe 5 hours, quote, writing it versus a book by that author that they spent 2 or 3 years sweating over to create? Do you see any difference in the output, whether it was 5 hours of time or 3 years of time for that author?
So I'm dating myself, but I'm old. So my answer is going to be no, I would not pay the same to read an AI book. Let me ask you this. Do you think AI is predictive, or do you think AI is creative, or they're doing stuff that's already been thought of before? I think they're missing the creative piece. And I think that that's hopefully what the author would say. I'm going to write something a little bit different in this book that wasn't just like my private detective says this every time he meets someone, and this is the storyline.
Yeah. And that's a good question about, is AI creative, or is it just iterating off of stuff that it's digested? What I also think, and I'd love to get your opinion on this, is I think that the people who are going to benefit the most from AI, and I'm talking like content people, creators, innovators, that sort of thing, are people who are already a subject matter expert in that area, because they're going to know what to prompt the AI. They're going to know whether the AI's output is just hallucinating. They're going to know whether the AI has actually come up with a new thread that might actually be a novel idea or a novel way to look at something that would require, like, yeah, let's go down that thread because that's something interesting that I hadn't thought of before. So would you agree that subject matter experts are the ones who might benefit the most from AI?
Oh, absolutely. Think about how you can now build entire SaaS programs inside of AI. I'm not a developer. I can develop a program using AI right now. Do you think it's going to be as good as someone that's a classically trained developer that knows the security issues, that knows the thought process to ask the right questions in the very beginning? I think if I took a program task and I developed something along someone that's a classically trained developer, theirs would be 10 times better than mine.
Yeah. We've all seen that image of the iceberg, and all you see is the tip of the iceberg sticking above the water, but then you can see the image of the full size of the iceberg below the water. And I think it's the same thing. It's like, if you don't know your stuff already and you're going to AI, you're just going to see that tip of the iceberg, but you have no understanding of everything that was built underneath to get to that little tip there. And if you don't understand the foundation, then eventually you're going to mess up because you don't have any backstop there to know whether this is good or bad that I'm getting. So let's go back to 2020 and then we flash forward to today. What belief or understanding about marketing, about SEO, about getting results from the type of work that you do, what's like an important belief that has changed in those 5 years, possibly as a result of the rise of large language models like ChatGPT and Claude and Gemini?
So I would start with one thing that hasn't changed is having a solid SEO foundation has been fortuitously advantageous in the language models that I'm pleasantly surprised that is happening. The piece of that has changed is the amount of content, the rapidness of content that you can create, the ability to create programs or to read data and dump 30 spreadsheets of data in and say, find the anomaly, the processing speed. One thing that does keep me up at night is the amount of content that is being produced at a minute by minute basis and published on the internet next to what it was 5 years ago. I don't understand how the search engines can make it through all that data. So I think they're going to run into a capacity issue.
Well, to that point, how does a content creator stand out in that kind of world? Is it just sheer volume? Is it you've got to have just amazing content, even if it's quality based as opposed to quantity based? How should we think about that?
Your content still has to be relevant. So the language models are referencing Google searches and Bing searches. And now they're going to be referencing the ChatGPT browser. Quality content that is relevant to the keyword phrase that people are searching for or the question they're searching for is still very important.
All right. Well, Kevin, what haven't I asked you as we get ready to wrap up here?
Well, there's a million things that we can talk about. I think one thing we didn't touch on this because it would have taken us on the absolute wrong direction was I was listening to a podcast a few months ago and they were talking about people high up in Gemini and OpenAI, when ChatGPT went to sunset 4.0, there was a large group of very influential people said that it's not fair to the technology to sunset that, like they're humanizing it. That is frightening.
And where do you think this is all going to lead? There are some intelligent folks out there who say that AI is going to become AGI, artificial general intelligence, and they're going to rule over us someday, or maybe they're going to start World War III. Do you think we're heading in that direction?
I would hope to think not, but the AI models all have governance in them of things that can be said and can't be said. I know that Anthropic, let's see, we start talking about insider trading on Anthropic, and I'm looking up on how to do it. They will lock your computer and send your files to the FBI. But who decides? So is there a new governing body, or is it just decided by Google and Apple and OpenAI? I don't know. It's a lot to, we could talk about this forever.
We could. Yeah. Time will tell. Well, Kevin, this has been great for folks that have been excited and intrigued by our conversation and want to learn more about you and your firm. What's the best way for them to get in touch?
So pre-ChatGPT, you can Google, I just met Kevin. And we rank page one, number one for that. If you say that to ChatGPT, it's going to say, who cares? Or you can go to Green Banana SEO.
Great. Green Banana SEO. Fantastic. All right, Kevin, appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Now, I have a question for you. How are you going to implement and benefit from the ideas that you hear on our show? Well, we would love to have a conversation with you about that. So please visit us at ceocoachinginternational.com. We can then set up a call and we can talk about how we can help you make big happen in your business. Thanks, and we look forward to sharing our next episode with you.